Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today, Wednesday, April 1st, 2020. Yeah, April Fool's Day. I don't think too many people, I don't know about you, but I've never liked April Fool's jokes, and I don't think now is the time. This year is the time for any kind of April Fool's jokes. I do have a sense of humor, just not that kind of a sense of humor. A lot of news, a lot of things going on. I mean, a lot. You know, we talked in previous programs, we talked about the deluge of news, of the headlines changing daily, you know, and now it seems you just turn around and there's different headlines and different news. You go to Drudge Report. I was on Drudge Report 3-4 o'clock this morning, as a matter of fact. And of course, links to tracking apps to detect the sick. Prisoners digging mass graves. Italy still on lockdown. And by the way, did you know that there were 6,000 U.S. citizens still on cruise ships? With some thinking, man, you know, they may never get back to the mainland until the end of this month. Not quite the vacations that they had intended. Now, with respect to the mass graves, Rikers Island, again, having been there and interviewed inmates and such, I've got to tell you, it's a different world there. Okay. Obviously, but right now, New York City's offering prisoners at Rikers some $6 per hour, which is a lot of money. This is being reported by The Intercept. And personal protective equipment if they agree to help dig mass graves on Hart Island. Now, Hart Island's off the coast of, I think, Brooklyn, Bronx, whatever. At any rate, digging mass graves, but they've been doing this in one form or another for a number of years. So this is not something that's necessarily new. The Rikers, by the way, is home to about 4,500 people. Their rate of infection at that location is 3.6%. And speaking of New York, obviously, I am speaking of New York. It's interesting to note that Cuomo, who had really bloviated about his, well, we're going to be making hand sanitizer. You know, prisoners will be making it for less money. You heard that, right? Everyone heard that. Yeah. Well, was that de Blasio? I'm going to be accurate on this. It really doesn't matter. They're kind of, to me, they're clones. I think it was Cuomo, but, it was Cuomo who said that he would put state prisoners to work making hand sanitizers. Now it's been reported and I believe documented that they're bottling and labeling hand sanitizer made by an outside vendor, not making it themselves. Yeah. That's the ticket. Again, you know, I look at the headlines and I look at the politicians, they're not leaders. They're servants of the people. I get it. Where do you stop? How do you filter through the lies? Man, there's, you know, it's just an amazing number of lies by the servants of the people. But some of the other headlines, I mean, with respect to the coronavirus, U.S. emergency medical stockpile nearly out of protective gear. There's an oxygen shortage. Even to the extent where some hospitals are are rationing masks. Of course, we've seen videos of that. Well, one guy in New York was found to be hoarding, I think, 12,000 masks, N95 masks. I mean, this is really crazy. Now, I was looking at the numbers real quick here, because I've got a great show lined up for you. In this year to date, or in this flu season, now that does not mean from the first of the year, this flu season, here in the United States, there have been 83,780 pneumonia flu-related deaths in the United States. With respect to coronavirus, right now, 4,059. But that number of 4,059 changes really by the minute, increases by the minute. And yes, as I mentioned yesterday, the deaths surrounding coronavirus patients and victims include those, for example, I use the example about somebody having a heart attack or having a heart issue, underlying heart issue, dying from that heart issue, and then testing positive for coronavirus, and the cause of death would be the coronavirus. Now, look, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a virologist. I don't know. But obviously, we do know the underlying secondary medical conditions include diabetes, heart problems, breathing problems. So if you've got those, you're in a high risk category. Looking at all of this, there's something that bothers me and has been bothering me. The need for lockdowns. And in the event you haven't watched any press conferences by President Trump, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to look at his face. Watch his body language and tell me there is not something very heavy weighing on that man. Look, I know that we have not reached the peak in terms of deaths in this country. We have not reached that. And I don't know when we're going to reach that. I don't know if anyone really knows when. We know about when, but not with any degree of specificity. The Chinese Communist Party virus is real. It's a real threat, and it should not in any way, shape, or form be understated, the threat from this. On the other hand, you've got the media who is using this as a political weapon against not just President Trump, but against all conservatives and especially Christian conservatives. And I referenced an article yesterday with Paul McGuire, and I'm going to tell you right now, the religious right or the Christian conservatives will end up taking the brunt of the blame for this. All right. Yeah, things like what Pastor Rodney Howard Brown did with respect to bringing people into his church. He's going to be blamed, as will others be blamed for allowing this or exacerbating the spread of this. But there's something else going on here. I mentioned the president's face, his look of concern, his level of concern. Look, this is enough for him to be concerned with, obviously. But you have the economy. You've got a shutdown. You've got the discussions about legitimate discussions about cutting out travel, interstate travel, quarantines, geographically specific quarantines. There's a lot of things going on. And then Mike Adams yesterday published an article, you know, as if that's not bad enough. Think about this. And this resonated with me when you look at all things, when you look at all of the events we've been seeing as part of a tapestry or part of a mosaic of things. The title of Adams' article is Three Unmistakable Signs That War Is Coming to America. Pompeo orders all American citizens to immediately return to the United States. Now, okay, there are reasons for that beyond war. But the article itself, and again, this is Natural News by Mike Adams. And Mike Adams was correct. He starts off the article real quick here he said, look, he released projections of about 10,000 deaths in America by May 10th. We're on schedule for that, perhaps even more. And at that time, many people thought he was just crazy. And he writes, as it turns out, we're likely to have over 100,000 deaths by May 10th. And I suspect that to be true, given the trajectory of this curve that I see taking place. Now, here are the three signs that he points out that, you know, we could be looking at war. And I don't say this lightly. And frankly, I'm uncomfortable with the signs. In other words, I'm reading what he says, or reading what he has written, and listening to what he and others are saying, watching what other people are doing, digging into the as much of the granular information that's reliable that I can, and I'm concerned about this. This could be a possibility. And that's the fact that the three signs are this. Sign number one, and this, again, written by Mike Adams, President Trump activating 1 million military reservists with medical skills to treat battlefield injuries. All right. So now, just to be clear, that gives him the executive order gives him the call-up authority. It doesn't immediately call. These people have not been immediately called. I was talking to one reservist earlier in the week, and he has not been called, but this executive order gives that ability. Sign number two, the Pentagon ordering high-level staffers into deep underground bunkers in Colorado. Now, that concerns me. By itself, it would concern me with the Chinese Communist Party coronavirus, Wuhan virus, this concerns me even more, not because they need to be bunkered in this facility, but NORAD announced, and NORTHCOM announced in this Facebook town hall meeting that these Pentagon high-level staffers are going to be in these deep underground bunkers. And he writes that you don't order military staffers into 2,000 foot deep bunkers just because of a virus. And that's true. And then the third sign, and this again is concerning. It would concern me by itself, but collectively, this is a big sign. And that's that Secretary of State Pompeo ordered all Americans living overseas to return to the United States immediately. And he writes that the cover story for this is that the coronavirus is collapsing international flights. Okay. Well, is it? Take a look at Flight Aware, Flight Tracker, and see what's above you. That alone would not justify all Americans returning from living abroad, since many Americans would just hunker down where they're at. But Pompeo wants all Americans to return right away. Have we seen this before? Yep. Before wars. Specifically, I'm thinking World War II in particular. Now, so you're looking at these three events, unmistakable signs, or those are his words now. My words, signs. I'm not saying they're unmistakable, but high-level officials within the Pentagon and U.S. State Department anticipate actions of war in the very near future. I can see this. And he writes that China is the most likely adversary, given that China probably released the Wuhan coronavirus in the first place. If you go back to Tucker Carlson's expose yesterday, I think it was yesterday, Tucker Carlson, his research, independent of others, said, yeah, this virus probably, it most likely came out of Wuhan. Okay. that lab, that Bio4 or BioLevel 4 lab. So when you're looking at this release, and some people will say, well, you know, it was an accidental release. Some people say it was deliberate. Well, you don't know. I don't know. I don't know if the president, I mean, who knows? And who can be sure? One thing I can be sure of is that the communist China, they lie. The communists lie. Now, writes Adams, and again, I'm going to wrap this up very quickly, but expect an attack on America when the nation reaches peak pandemic health chaos and economic disruptions. We're seeing the economic disruptions. Are they self-inflicted? Well, they're a consequence of what? Of this lockdown. So, you know, and you've noticed, I'm sure, that President Trump saying, look, I want to get things back to normal by the end of April. All right. So at first it was Easter. Now he had to bump that back a little bit. And I understand that. But all of this is concerning. And I just want people to be aware. And as I said early on, when this first started, don't think, I mean, think long term. Don't think short term. Think long term. In other words, some people compare this to like a snow event where people are kind of hunkered in their houses for a couple of days, a week. No, no. This is not a snow event. This is a bad winter where people are hunkered in their houses for a long time, for a season. And that's what I'm seeing right now. And that's what I'm looking at. So in terms of mental preparation, don't think that this is going to be over in a few days or a week or 2 weeks. And even if it does appear that way, I would urge everyone to still prepare. You go to the store, people say, well, you know what? It's too late. It's too late. I can't prepare. No, you go to the store, you buy an extra can, extra jar of something while you still can. Even if you don't have a lot of money, you don't need a lot of money. Just buy that extra can or two or three, whatever it might be, whatever you can do, and put it in your pantry. And you know, after a couple of weeks, however much time God gives us, then we've got that much more. It doesn't take a credit card and a long-term storable food facility. No one wants your money. I'm not saying, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money. I'm just telling you this. Now, what concerns me is also involves my guest. Last night, Chris Ann Hall, you know, the constitutional attorney, Chris Ann Hall, guest hosted for, Keith Hansen. The Keith Hansen Radio Show, which is powered by the Hagmann Report. If you go to HagmannReportLive.com, there you'll find Keith Hansen's show. Well, Chris Ann Hall guest hosted for Keith Hansen last night. She was talking about the current events, about this quarantine / lockdown, and the constitutionality of it. Is it constitutional? Can we be told, or can places of worship be shut down in New York or elsewhere? I would like to see the mayor or the governor say, you know what? All places of worship, including mosques, must be shut down. I wonder how that would go over. Are we not hearing about mosques being shut down? Or are we hearing about mosques being shut down? Again, that's just a question. It's not politically correct to ask, but my guest, Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com, ProvisInstitute.com. Folks, if you haven't done so already, I'm going to tell you right now, his books are absolutely invaluable. And think about your child, your children at home, who are being homeschooled for the rest of the year. think about teaching them the Constitution the way it should be taught. Go to provisinstitute.com, and there you'll find an array of books, including A Constitution If You Can Keep It, a series of books, Liberty, Will It Survive? I'm looking here at my own litany of books. And then easily understood economics. I'm telling you right now, bathroom economics. Yeah, the array of books there, it's endless. Well, I shouldn't say endless, but I mean, it certainly will provide you the teaching materials for your children. And I guarantee you, you will learn stuff. You will learn information about the Constitution that you did not know before. I've become really educated, at least in my view, about things I didn't know. And I took the Hillsdale College Constitution course. All right. And this, far expands that. Provisinstitute.com. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. Now, I've intruded on the time with Dr. Proctor, and I apologize for that intrusion, but I do want to welcome him back to talk about what's going on today, you know, the constitutionality of the events that we're seeing, and any and all other areas that he wants to discuss. And I appreciate Dr. Proctor's time, his gracious gift of time for this program, and certainly my intrusion upon his time at the first part of this program. Dr. Proctor, how are you, sir?
Oh, things going well here, and I'm very interested in what you're saying. All the stuff you've been talking about for the last 20 minutes, very interested. I wanted to ask a question.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned the young lady who was hosting the program yesterday, but you didn't really say what she said about the Constitution.
No, she is a constitutional attorney, and she is one who believes, like you, the Constitution. She started out the program by saying, look, the Constitution is not a living, breathing document. It is etched in stone, and our rights come from God. And they're delineated within the Constitution. So you guys would get, your conversation would be, you know, very, very cordial. She is a constitutionalist.
Good. Excellent. Because I'm always concerned about people who claim to be constitutionalists and they've never read it. concerned about that.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of attorneys running around that have never read the document.
Boy, I'll tell you, that's the truth. And she's pretty well known in as a constitutionalist, and she has her own radio show. She just sat in for Keith Hansen, but she said, and I think you would agree that the government, specifically and especially the federal government, would have no right to shutter religious institutions or stop assemblies.
No, none at all. I mean. I mean, they have the power to do it, and they have the influence to do it. But let's just take the Latter-day Saint Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Let's just take that particular church. Nobody has told it to shut down, but it began Holmes teaching a year ago, and then when this started to become a problem, they voluntarily said, "Why don't we just go to full home teaching for now?" Nobody told them to do it. They just did because they thought it was the right time, the right thing to do. That's how it should be done, like that. Edicts from the government are not welcome.
No, I agree. I don't think that, you know, I don't need the government, whether it's the federal government, the state, or local government, to tell me, hey, Doug, you know what? You probably should stay away from crowds because you've got all of the underlying medical conditions that would make a coronavirus infection really bad for your health. I don't need some, you know, politician telling me that. I don't need that. So, yeah.
But my concern on that very thing. My birthday was yesterday. I did turn 79, okay? I do have diabetes. I've had it for 20 years. I have had heart attacks. I do have heart problems. I do have blood pressure problems. All of the things they're talking about, I have. I have a oxygen thing at home. I have oxygen every night. It's a condenser, produces it, and I have it every night. I am what you might call very, very, if I get it, it'll be a bad thing, okay? Just put it that way. Yet, cut and pick, I don't believe that it's really as serious around us as they say it is. I'm having, let's just talk about last Friday.
Okay.
Last Friday, the government came out and said 17,000 positive in one day alone, Thursday. 17,000. Now, I thought to myself, just a minute, maybe we had it and maybe we didn't, but let's drop back a little bit in reality. The first of the month, they didn't have enough stuff to test everybody that needed to be tested. They couldn't do it. It just wasn't done. People were complaining. There was no testing being done. Should have been. Okay.
Right.
By the middle of the month, not much changed. All of a sudden, 3 weeks later, they've got enough stuff to find 17,000 positives. Well, to find 17,000 positives, you have to do at least 100,000 tests. And they have to compile that all overnight. It was Thursday. They announced it on Friday. Come on. I can't believe that that's true.
Wow. Okay.
When you put it that way.
Yeah, I do. I do. When you put it that way. So that morsel of news or that part of the tapestry doesn't make sense to me. You're correct. You cannot process. The numbers don't make sense.
That's right. They couldn't possibly do what they said they did. And even if they could do 100,000 tests, there's no way any government facility can put that all together and the numbers correct by the next morning.
No, I 100% agree with you. They have trouble keeping track of inventory, let alone, you know, refining the numbers to that to a test like that. I agree with you.
So
on that.
I have a lot of trouble with this because the numbers that they're putting out don't jive with reality. So if it doesn't jive with reality, what are they telling us? What aren't they telling us is really true? And what is really true? Now, I just heard yesterday, I guess it was yesterday, it might have been the day before, a young lady was talking to, an automobile place where we're getting our car back. A young lady came in and started chatting with another one, just the two of them, friendly talking. And she said, oh, my friend, she's got it bad. She's got a bad case of corona. That's how she referred to it.
Okay.
Now, I'm right here in Kaysville, Utah, which is a very small community. And where did she get it from? Or did she just hear all this hype on the news and she got a little bit of a fever from flu and now she has corona? She's decided. How does she know?
That's a good point. Was she tested? I
have no idea because that part I'm not privy to what really went on. I am just privy to the fact that how did she come down with that disease in our community? I mean, our community isn't rife with anything. We just go along. Nobody seems to have any problems whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah, she claims to have a serious case of it. Where from? And I remember back in the January time frame, a guy in Northern California, and I have the references if I need to look them up, but a guy in Northern California had not had any contact with anybody that had the disease. That's how it was. That's how they said it. No contact whatsoever. Yet he had the disease. From where?
That's a good question.
I'm having a lot of trouble with this. Then we go to the stuff that we talked about last week. The guys in Italy, thousands and thousands of deaths. But when they checked them out, they found that they were all, 99% of those deaths were all caused by prevailing problems that may or may not have died anyway. And then they put them to the hospital and gave them antiviral drugs that had exacerbation chemicals in them that would kill them, even if we weren't talking about this disease. 99% of the people did not die from that disease. They died from the hospital stay or underlying stuff. I'm having trouble with these things.
No, I look. I know we are being lied to on multiple levels. Okay. I mean, I get that. I can't identify all of the lies. I guess, you know,
it's not possible.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I don't know you personally. I suspect you probably have raised a family and you probably have had your dealings with teenagers. It's kind of like,
Yes, I have.
You know,
yes, I have. It was several years ago. My kids now deal with teenagers. And yes.
But you know, when you talk to a teenager and you say, what'd you do last night? And you already know the answer to that. They were out partying and, you know, with their friends where they shouldn't be. And, they say, well, you know, I was at the library studying. You know, they're lying. Okay. It's like, this is kind of like how I feel. I feel like I'm dealing with teenagers, when I'm listening to the news and people supposedly in authority, like, I can't get the truth. And you know, things aren't right when none of this makes sense. And that's what I have a problem about. It just, things don't make sense. Like you were talking about the test. How do you do that in less than 24 hours, really? Test?
Yes. How do you do that?
Good point. We must have a great, efficient, government out there.
We must really have an efficient government, yes. I'll sell you some swampland in Florida if you're interested.
and then we see these lockdowns and Drudge. I mentioned the Drudge this morning. A 99-year-old guy in New Jersey. I don't know whether you saw this or not. He was arrested. Oh my goodness! A 99-year-old man, resident of New Jersey, was arrested for violating the state's emergency rules. Now, this is from the smoking gun. Okay, so he was charged with violating the state's coronavirus emergency regulations. And I'll just stop right there. I mean, regardless of what the violations were, and you can read it on the smoking gun. My goodness. What have we turned ourselves into? And is this one big social experiment that we're engaged in? I've got a lot of questions.
Like, yes. You know. My book, my set of books, the six volume set, describes these kinds of things in detail and who did them to us. Not talking about this one, of course, but previous ones and who did them to us.
I know. And I'd just love to get your take on those, wherever you want to go. But, you know, the Liberty, Will It Survive series. Folks, if you're serious about the Constitution, if you're serious about history, and if you're serious about where we're at right now, invest in the Liberty, Will It Survive series by Dr. Proctor. Go to provisinstitute.com. I cannot recommend them highly enough. I've got volume two sitting right here in front of me, and if I didn't, I couldn't do this with the book on the desk.
Okay.
I'm kidding. Echoing old time Rush Limbaugh by doing that, but you know, you've really mapped out kind of our subjugation and how far away from the Constitution this country has gone in your series. It's just amazing.
Yes. When you get to volume four, I just want to mention this, okay? It's not a part of this discussion really at all, but I just want to mention it. Do you remember all the ozone stuff we had not too many years ago? I mean, it was fierce.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, I did the statistics. How big is the ozone layer? How big is the circumference of the Earth? How many square miles are in the ozone layer above the square Earth, above the circumference of the Earth where it is, or I mean the diameter of the Earth where it's located? What are the mathematics of that? And what can the United States, with its infinitesimal infinitesimal in comparison, how can it do anything to damage the ozone layer at all? And then in further research, I discovered the ozone layer is created by nature over the Arctic Ocean in cold time, and over the Arctic continent when it gets really cold. It's got nothing to do with anything else. That's it. Yet what happened in our country that our government insisted on, and now you can't even buy good radiator fluid anymore.
Exactly. And
see,
yeah.
That's the kind of stuff I worry about, wonder about. I've got too much stuff in there that shows these things have been foisted upon us. I mean, I know where the climate stuff came from. It came from Iron Mountain I've got the Iron Mountain report and read through it. They recommended, one of their recommendations was environment, to keep the people under control so the government can have scary things happen. I'm sorry, guys. I can't. I'm having trouble. There is a disease. Absolutely. You're perfect. There is a disease, and it's a serious disease.
Right. But is it?
But
and there it is. But.
How many people are going to get it? And they're trying to tell us that everybody's going to. I hear the words. I hear hundreds of thousands. I haven't heard the word millions yet, but I hear hundreds of thousands.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of thousands. I don't believe it. I believe we're being hoaxed. I do believe there's a disease. I do believe that it's a hoax.
The hype it's almost, the way I look at it is this. It's almost like a script, like we're living in this television program and the script has been written and doggone it, you better follow the script. And, you know, here are your lines and they're given to the various news outlets. They're given to the various, leadership or servants, public servants. And we have to follow these lines or we have to follow the script because there's something wrong here, man.
When you begin to read, well, maybe you've already passed this, 1920s, I call them the International Banking Establishment. The International Banking Establishment purchased the editorial staffs of all the newspapers in the early 1920s. J.P. Morgan did it. He did that. Now, they dictated, from then on, they dictate what it's supposed to say. Have you guys ever heard of Walter Lippmann?
Yes, we briefly touched on him last week, but let's go over that again.
Okay, here's Walter Lippmann. I don't know what kind of a person he is, but I do know he was a part of the inquiry group in the early teens. Okay, inquiry group, this is a part of the circle groups, which are a part of the International Banking Establishment. This group of people was established first by Cecil Rhodes. Never mind, all that history can be gleaned. Then Walter Lippmann was a part of that inquiry group. That was the pre-organization to the CFR, which started in the early 20s. It started after we couldn't get the League of Nations passed. So that's when the CFR started to get more control over our people. And the CFR has controlled all of our lives since then. Well, it's the organization that purchased all the news outlets in the 20s through J.P. Morgan, who was the agent for Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of information here.
Yes.
Anyway, so here we have a person, Walter Lippmann. It turned out that he wanted to be a part of the CFR. Yeah. And they said, no, we want you to stay right there in the news and you take care of the news for us. Now, let's move ahead to a book written in the 1950s by Alan Drury, and it's called Capable of Honor. And I'll be darned if there wasn't a fellow in that book that's constantly writing all the editorials for all the newspapers and everybody to read and know everything's right, get all the right information. He controlled the news in that book, controlled the news completely. And what was his name? Wonderful Walter.
Wow.
I'll be darned.
Life imitating art or life?
The other way around.
Art
imitating life.
There you go. That's right.
You see why I'm worried about these things?
Of course.
I know what's going on. I know we're being fed a lot of stuff. I just don't know how much is true. I would like to know. But my observation of real world as I see it around, a lot of things are coming that are not right according to Hoyle.
Thank you for saying that. You know, the little hairs on the back of my neck have been standing straight out for the last, I don't know, couple of months anyway. Yesterday, I had the occasion, I think it was yesterday, the days run together. I made one of my first and very few trips to the grocery store because I just don't go there anyway, okay? But from the last time I was there to this time, doctor, I got to tell you, there were in my community, which is 100,000 roughly, you know, the city's 100,000, 80,000, 100,000, I don't know. But okay, small by urban standards, and we're kind of spread out. But this is an upscale grocery store in an upscale area. And on the floor of the grocery store are red taped, I mean, very thick, very bright tape lines. Social distancing. There's a guy up, there's a guy up there holding a sign. You know, this, with an arrow to indicate which register was open. And I, this is a true story. I had one of those mini carts, you know, small cart, not the one you ride, but you push. And, so I pushed my cart and I pushed it a little past that red line as I approached the conveyor belt. And the woman said, stop, stop, stop. And I looked at her. I said, what? You know, I'm looking around like, what'd I do? You got to stay behind that line. I thought, okay. And I, anyway, to make a long story short, I said, you know, this reminds me of the Seinfeld episode about the soup Nazi, how people were, you know.
I know that episode.
And I'm serious. I'm thinking, my goodness, what have we turned into? I get the idea. Look, I understand the theory. I don't agree with the execution or the principle. Okay. I mean, I just don't, because let me tell you something. If this is as bad as they say it is, then just by sucking the air in that store, you're going to get it.
Yes, you know? That's right. That's exactly right. Standing behind the line won't make a bit of difference.
No.
1 inch one way or the other doesn't make a bit of difference.
And doctor, we've got neighbors. I was talking to my neighbor who was talking to his friend who does construction repair work kind of stuff. And he went to a house to do a repair. And the neighbor of that house where he went to called the police on this guy because he was violating the orders. I'm thinking, what's going on here? Help me out. Help me understand this. So to me, this is like a big social experiment. And what in the hell is going on, doctor? What's going on here?
Well, you just outlined where we could, I didn't say are, could be headed. Neighbors reporting on neighbors, just like it happens in every police state. Every police state, they want everybody to report on every. They all become spies on each other. You can't trust anybody because they're going to report you. That's what a police state is.
Man.
And we are approaching that kind of attitude.
Is this self-inflicted? I mean, look, I get the fact. I don't want to get sick. I don't want to be on a ventilator. I don't want to be, you know, having my wife saying, well, you got to pull the plug, I guess. although she would.
Depends on your insurance policy. Oh, never mind.
But is this a self, I mean, have we been so dumbed down and so brainwashed? Is this where we're at today that we are nothing but a bunch of lemmings?
Or that's it. You are absolutely right.
Oh, man.
That's where we are. That's exactly where we are. We're being trained. We've been being trained by the educational system for 50, 60 years.
Ah.
We've been trained by the educational system.
I'll tell you what, I think I'm going to come out and live by you. You and I we could be neighbors and we get along just fine. I mean.
Yes. I'd even come over and have dinner with you. No sweat.
There we go. You know, we can do, I don't know. I don't play bridge, but maybe we could start. I could learn. Anyway, but you know, this just makes the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up. I'm thinking we're that close, aren't we? We're that close to really losing our freedom and kind of taking the Constitution.
Yes, we are. That's the major issue here.
Yeah.
What will come out of this, even if it stops in 6 months or 2 months, what's going to come out of this?
Yes.
They've tested us. Will we respond? And we are. Oh, good. Mm. There's a test. And we are responding. Exactly what they want us to do. They're saying jump, and we're asking how high.
Right. Because
I mean, people standing in the stores, don't you dare cross that line, yelling at you. That's terrible. I see all the lines, too. I cross them. Nobody's bothered me. I don't cross them on purpose. I got to tell you, I went to the post office the other day, mail out a whole bunch of books, okay? Here I am with all my books. I put them on the counter. There are three people in the post office ahead of me in a line. They're each 12 to 15 feet apart. I walked in there and I says, oh, look, we're all scared of each other, aren't we? Now, that's what I said, and they all kind of chuckled, but they didn't change where they were standing.
Right. Exactly. You know, again, I go back to that, you know, that hilarious kind of funny episode from Seinfeld, the soup Nazi. Boy, I want that soup because it's good soup, or at least I think it's good soup, or at least other people say it's good, but so I want it. And so we, you know, we comply with the rules with the, yeah, we go through the motions to get the soup. And this is where I see, in the kind of a twisted, convoluted sort of way, we are doing things, that we shouldn't be doing. I mean, we are allowing our gun store, or the gun shop stores to be closed while Planned Parenthood is still flipping open. What's
that? Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
I mean,
no.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Guys, my jaw's tight, okay? I have a document here on my computer, The Roots. How to destroy the roots. Okay, so that kind of a thing. 60 pages long. The entire article outlines in detail how people have been using us against each other to destroy our, in using health, using medicine, to destroy our population. Mm. And they show how Gardasil works. They were discussed in that. They discuss all these kinds of things, all the people that are doing that. The goal is 95% off the earth. That's the goal.
Sure is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the goal. So these are varying things to do. And these kinds of things are all a part of it. Planned Parenthood is a goal to decrease the population.
Yep. Yep.
That's all it is. And they try to make it okay by passing laws that say it's okay. But the Declaration of Independence says a life is a guarantee. Come on, guys. A life is a guarantee. God said don't murder one of those 10. Come on, folks. Let's stop ignoring the real thing in life. The real thing in life is our Father in heaven, and we don't abort our kids. We have murdered in the 60 million children in our country over the last 30 years or 40 years now. Murdered them.
Absolutely. And isn't it not funny, but isn't it something how we have changed the language from an unborn child to a fetus?
From yes, we have.
Abortion, we shouldn't call it abortion. It's murder is what it is.
Yes, you know, it's murder against a defenseless child who they rip apart in the womb is a part of the abortion procedure, and the kid can feel pain.
Yes, yes. So,
they rip him apart.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is all okay. Partial birth abortion. People don't realize what partial birth abortion means. It means the child is almost born and they kill him in the birth canal. That's what it means.
I look at my grandchildren and I think, you know, they're a blessing from God, and I don't know how anyone can murder an unborn child. And I watched my children being born, and, you know, it's...
You're right. And you realize, of course, that we have been taught and conditioned that it's okay to do it.
Yep. Yep.
And we do it to 3,000 a day.
Yeah. 3,000 a day.
On the taxpayer's dollar, I might add. $500 million on the taxpayer's dollar. We are paying for the slaughter of our families.
Okay, so let me get this straight. 3,000 murders a day of unborn children. So,
yes.
So the last 2 days, the body count of unborn children who have been murdered by, among others, Planned Parenthood, far exceeds double, or almost, well, at least half as much, again.
150%. Yeah.
Of the COVID deaths. And
oh, yeah, and we all worry about that, but nobody worries about the 6,000.
Right, right. So our prior, I mean, again, this is, folks, this is not to downplay, you know,
yeah, we got to be real careful. There is a disease, okay?
Sure.
Absolutely. You must be careful. There is a disease.
Right. But still, the numbers, we bring a country to a screeching halt. You know, we stop commerce, which, you know, if it's a voluntary stoppage, okay, but I, where in the Constitution, where in the laws are we, okay with this? Or should we be okay with this? And you,
no, we should not be okay with this. We should not be. We've all been dumbed down, though, because government knows. Government's our safeguard. Government's our keeper. Government helps us. Government pays our bills. Government takes care of us. Government makes sure that everything we eat is perfect. Oh, yes.
And you know,
the government our life.
I thought of you when I was, it was funny. I was talking to Eric, the tech, who is my son-in-law too. And, we were talking about, the governors and the various politicians who flip-flopped on that quinine stuff, the hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't do that. You can't we're going to ban off-label use. And then all of a sudden they're flipping and saying, oh, now we need it. We need it. You got to send it to us. And I'm thinking, you know, how arbitrary is that? And power versus authority, as you had talked about before. I mean, everything you've talked about, since you've been on, and I want to thank you, by the way, for your time that you give me and give our audience, because we learn so much. But everything you've been talking about is on display today, with everything
that's
going on.
Out there, there's nothing hidden anymore. The book, Liberty, Will It Survive the Future, was all written during the era when conspiracy theorists are going to be shot at sunrise. There is no conspiracy theory. Since Trump's been elected, they've all come out in the open and said, here we are, look at us, there we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right there. All you have to do is just look with an open mind. You can see that it exists. There is no theory. In my books, I give you the names of who the people are that have been doing it to us. By name.
Yes. And I've I've jumped around in the Liberty, Will It Survive series to look and to see. By the way, folks, this series is so valuable. I mean, I can tell you this. I will be using this series of books, including, Constitution, If You Can Keep It, as well as, the economic books, Bathroom Economics and Easily Understood Economics, in my radio programs, because there's the intellectual work product of Dr. Richard Proctor is fabulous. So please go to provisinstitute.com. That's provisinstitute.com. And while you're captive agents, so to speak, you get the books. Compel Dr. Proctor to make him go to the post office every single day with truckloads of orders.
Yeah, because that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
I want the people to have them. These are very inexpensive. I'm sorry. They're inexpensive. There are 10 of them, so it sounds expensive, but they're inexpensive. Given the level of books in today's society, what they cost, what the shipping costs, all that kind of stuff costs, I absorb all those costs.
Yeah, and thank you for that.
I absorb all the shipping, and I absorb the sales tax. In our state, I don't have to absorb it other places. I don't get charged for it, but I do absorb it in our state. I absorb these things. I want those books out.
You know,
in reality, now I'm going to mention a little bit of an ad here. The Liberty series will give you the background of what's going on today. It'll give you the background. And by the time you get through with those, it'll take you a while. There's well over 2,000 pages, but by the time you get through that, you will understand what the dickens is happening today.
That's
and
right.
What will happen in the future. You'll notice as you read through that a lot of the things were pulled out of 2006 and 2008, 2007, and that's 14 years ago. And the people say, well, this is out of date. No, it isn't. Everything they're doing is up to date constantly. Just because the reference is 14 years ago doesn't mean that the information is any less pertinent.
You know, I noticed that going through this. You talk about Huckabee, for example. You talk about the courts of the United States, international courts. You talk about Rand Paul, Ron Paul. I mean, articles by Thomas Sowell and others that are so relevant to what we're seeing today. It's just amazing. Immigration issues as well. So
a whole section on immigration in Volume 6.
I have it I have it, I got a post-it note there on volume 6 on immigration, but you reference it in volume 2 and well, throughout the series, actually.
Yes, actually, yes, throughout the series. But I took the stuff that Trump has faced in volume 6, the activist church judges versus the rule of law, I think that's how the title is of that section. And it shows detail. Now, you'll notice also something that's important here, and I mentioned this right now. I include the whole articles.
Yes.
I always give credit for who wrote it, where you could get it, what the date it was written. But I give the whole article, and my reason for doing that is, in 5 years, you can't find the article anymore. You don't know whether I said the right thing or not.
That's right. You're exactly
so
right.
So that's why I've included the articles. I give credit to everybody who wrote them, and I chop them up so that they don't all... But it doesn't matter. I provide the information as it exists in reality at the time, not something that you have to go ibbid, and never find anything, and you'll never find it.
That's right. Which my wife actually picked up a couple of the books and was going through them, and that's one thing that she didn't notice, because she reads quite a bit, and she said, you know, I like his style of writing, meaning the articles are all there, among other things, but that was one of the talking points. So, folks, the Liberty series, Liberty, Will It Survive? Again, I cannot recommend this highly enough, as well as all of Dr. Proctor's books. We have a few minutes at the top of the hour. So many things I want to get into. The tracking apps that are going to be...
Yes.
We got to talk about that, because, you know...
Oh, yes. This is really something, the tracking apps. Oh, my.
You know, well, just our freedoms and liberties in general. So with that, I just want to say, folks, my guest, Dr. Richard Proctor, his website, Provis Institute, P-R-O-V like Victor I-S .com, provisinstitute.com. And again, I cannot highly recommend his books any more than I already do. Also, folks, while you're out there on the internet, while you can get it, HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com. We've got some gourmet coffee. It is terrific. You've got three choices. You've got Detective's Choice, which is hypercaffeinated. And that's what I've been drinking all day, all morning, all afternoon. And can you hear my voice? I'm telling you what, I'm fired up. And Patriot and Revolution Blend. And you know what? Patriot and Revolution Blend, I'm going to dedicate to Dr. Proctor today, because we are patriots, and I think we're about ready for a revolution. You say when you want a revolution. HagmanStore.com. That's HagmanStore.com. Folks, we're going to be right back. You stay right where you're at. Give me 2 minutes. Network break. Again, Dr. Richard Proctor. Stay there.
Reporting on what the mainstream media won't, you're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Back. You're listening to the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. That's right. Truth can't be silenced. You can smack us around a lot, and we've been smacked around a lot. Just ask me. I'll tell you. Yeah, I'll take some cheese with my wine. But seriously, truth can't be silenced. And it's amazing to me what is happening to people out there. Even you folks, I've been getting emails from you saying, look, you know, your program's being interrupted by ads. You know, folks, we don't put ads on the YouTube videos. We don't do that. Or, you know, it's difficult to find. You can't find it via search engines. Some people say, oh, yeah, I can find you right away. Others can't find you. You know, look, putting aside operator error, there are some algorithms that present problems. They don't want the truth out there. And we've seen this with Alex Jones, InfoWars, David Knight, Owen Schroyer, and really in a big way with Google taking the app off of Google for what? For not for cause, most assuredly, just by talking about the quinine treatment, the hydroxychloroquine treatment, talking about what other people had said before it was acceptable to the elite. That's right. So, folks, do me a favor. Bookmark HagmanReportLive.com. Also, subscribe to YouTube. Please do that because that messes with the algorithms. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter because there you'll find some interesting things that I'll put out once in a while when I feel like it. Even Lady the Studio Dog, she's got her own Twitter account. She doesn't use it too much because her paws can't really focus on the keys. I got to help her out, you know. Anyway, my guest is Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. That is ProvisInstitute.com. Let me tell you something. His books are gold in my view, and I think in a lot of people's view. And his time with us is so precious. I want to wish him a happy birthday, and I would recommend everybody. I'm going to put his email address in the program and send him a happy birthday email. He's 29 years old, or 59 years old.
Oh, yeah. Something. 90 last week.
Yeah, 90 last week. but you know what? You're sharp as a tack, and I appreciate that. So anyway, let's get right back into this. They're coming out with tracking apps. Oh, my goodness. What are we doing? What's going on? And you know what? I can guarantee you, once that's implemented, there ain't no going back. So what's going on?
Oh, that's right. Never happens. Little history again. I like history.
I do too.
In the mid-2000s, you're going to read about it in the book if you read the books. RealID, R-E-A-L-I-D, mid-2000s. They were going to have us all tracked on our driver's license. Had to have universal driver's license, had to have universal information, and you had to have one of the right kind of driver's license, and that was all there was to it, or you couldn't even go into a federal building. A federal building could mean a post office. You couldn't even go in if you didn't have the right kind of driver's license.
Yep.
And they could stop you and ask you about it, too. It's called Papa, papers, please, you know. Anyway, so people got upset. The states got upset. And I believe it was Michigan. I believe it was. Might have been Montana. It was up there in the north central part of the country. They said, we're not going to do it, period. Well, you've got to, or we won't let your people on the plane. Oh, we're not going to do it, period. We're not going to do it. Now, remember, the TSA, a federal government organization, decides who can get on the plane or not. Anyway, so they said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to give them the driver's license as necessary, period. We're not going to do a national papers program to track everybody. Well, they complained enough. The Homeland Security gave them permission to postpone, and they said, we don't need permission to postpone. We're not going to do it. Some other states got with them, and the whole program died.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? It's back. Nothing ever dies. It's back. Go to the airport, stand in the line, and you'll see it. If you don't have a gold star on your driver's license, you can't get on the plane. It's back.
That's right.
The federal government never leaves anything that it can redo again. Anything that it does today will continue, and it will never, ever stop.
And I want to remind people, this is from 2005. If you get Liberty, Will It Survive? Dr. Proctor gets into this. This is a Real ID Act of 2005 that was enacted in 2005. It was an act of Congress. It modified federal law pertaining to security, authentication, issuance, the procedures, the standards, and so on for driver's licenses, identity documents. And you're right. And you know, here's what it did, just briefly. And again, I'm citing the master here, Dr. Proctor. Title II of the Act establishes new federal standards for state-issued driver's licenses, changes the visa limits for temporary workers, funds some reports of and pilot projects related to border security. Those are kind of the innocuous, not the innocuous, but the kind of the frills of this. But the bottom line is it tightens the identities or tightens the restrictions on who can do what with these documents.
Yes.
And that, there it
yes,
is.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Man.
Okay, now continuing that history a little bit. So that died. What happened then? The credit cards came out with this tap and go.
Yes.
They came out with this, you just have to walk by. You can just tap something and you don't have to worry about finding, tap and go. You got to have that on your credit card. And we accepted that. Oh, yes, we want to have that. We accepted it. It's exactly the same thing, but we accepted it on a credit card, which we did not accept it on our driver's license. But there's no difference. So the pattern continued. Now we're back to getting on our driver's license again. This time, nobody's complaining. I haven't heard a word from anybody.
Isn't that interesting?
You got a year from now about, or you won't get on a plane because TSA, the federal government, will not let you on a plane if you don't have the federal government's permission, driver's license kind of permission. How do you like that?
I got to tell you, you were correct because this was the real ID Act. The implementation across the board was scheduled to start October of this year. But guess what? The pandemic now pushed it back to October of 2021. So
Good. We
have an extra year there. But every air traveler, you're going to need a real ID compliant license or other acceptable form of ID like a passport or military card. But nonetheless, there it is. And you're right. We were trained, weren't we? Kind of muscle memory.
Yes, we were.
Training. Okay.
We were trained and they use a credit card to do it.
Yeah.
Now we have chips in the credit card. I tried hard to get rid of chips. I cut the chip out of one of my cards. It wouldn't work anymore. The card wouldn't work at all. Oh, I was irritated. But the chip, everybody thinks, oh, that doesn't make any difference. Look how simple it is. You just slide it in. Oh, yeah. Well, all I did before was just slide it. What's
That's
the difference?
Right. Well,
but what's happened is those chips can be read while you drive down the street.
That's right. Or if you're sending the, I mean, how many people's identities have been stolen from the chips? I worked and still do consultation on fraud cases, and I've seen this happen. So, you know, not
good.
We're
in real trouble. Then they put another thing on the ID card, the three digits on the back.
Yep.
Good. We got more security, they said. Yet everybody wants the three digits on the back. So where's the security?
Yeah, you tell me. I think
it's all just tracking the population. They've got to know where we are. They already can track us through the credit card use.
Yep.
Now they're using the track us in every way they can. Now the tracking app. Everybody's got these phones. Oh, let's put a tracking app. Oh yeah, let's do that. Let's do the other. And some of them they just put on automatically. And everybody's phone is on all the time. So they know everywhere you go. And we've got a center up here in Bluffdale, Utah, that's a massive storage thing, is storing all this information on everybody. They're using zettabytes. Zettabytes is kind of like, well, you could record every word that was ever said in the world in one zettabyte. I mean, I've got the statistics in the book somewhere about zettabytes and all the steps. There's like 20 zeros behind a one in a zettabyte.
Yeah,
we have two or three
that.
Of those in
yep.
Bluffdale, tracking the entire country all the time, everything you do.
Yeah, and people think, well, you know, the NSA is just merely collecting metadata. No, everything, like you said, everything you type, everything you say, it's all being recorded and stored, and you know what? It's going to be used against us.
Yes, it will be.
Yeah.
It will be. You've heard the sentence, a good deed every good deed is punishable, or whatever they say exactly.
It never goes unpunished. That's right.
That's it. A good deed never goes unpunished. Well, a piece of information in the government's hand never goes unused.
Exactly. And think about the, you know, you expect confidentiality. You're typing an email to somebody. Hey, you may say something a little bit, you know, maybe you shouldn't have typed that. And all of a sudden, you know, I won't get too, you know what? I'll say it anyway. It's amazing I'm a defendant in an ongoing lawsuit for the last 5 years. And it's amazing to me how I could say something on Monday and read about it in the court papers I get on Friday. Okay. It's a civil case, not a criminal case, but nonetheless, it blows my mind. Now, with respect to this coronavirus, the government is setting to release contact tracking app, which detects nearby virus carriers. This was being reported today by Sky News. So, this app supposedly alerts people if they come too close to someone who's tested positive for the coronavirus. This, according to Sky News.
How do they know?
How do they exactly? How does that even work?
They know because everybody that's been tested, whether it's been tested positive or negative, everybody that's been tested is now marked.
Exactly. And you know they didn't just develop that yesterday or, you know, since the coronavirus was identified. So
there is a possibility. Now, I'm not saying that this is true, but there is a possibility that this coronavirus hoax is just to get more people on tracking devices, some way to track them.
Well, you know, it doesn't even have to. I mean, it could be as real as anything, the virus I'm talking about, and still be exploited for that purpose, still be used,
yes.
You know.
That's right.
Now,
you will also, in my discussions about tracking, keeping track of this,
yep.
You will also discover that they have ways to drive the car down the street and pick up everything that's being said in the homes as it goes by.
That is correct.
We're being tracked. We can't even lift our finger. They don't know about it nowadays.
That's right.
Smart meters. You know about smart meters. They can track everything. They can track. I didn't even think they could. They can track stuff. Now, these are electric smart meters. They try to say, oh, this is going to really help us make sure that everything is right. What it's really going to do is allow them to control what electricity you use in your home. But along with that, they can keep track of everywhere anything goes on in your home. I do not know how, but they can.
That's frightening.
Yes.
You know, our forefathers are the founders of our country. Although I don't believe that they had an idea of the technology we have today, they certainly addressed it in the Constitution, you know, by saying, look, we should be secure in our person and property.
And, yes, and, absolutely.
And we're not.
We're not at all. Today, not a bit. You know, you just mentioned write an email. I would paraphrase that. Never write anything down that you don't want everybody to know.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
I mean, any letter you send, anything you do, never do it.
And if you do it in cursive so the millennials can't read it.
They can't read it anymore, right? Don't print it.
Right. And, you know, that saddens me, too, how far we've devolved from where we were. But so everything, but you know, I have to agree that kind of the way the conversation started, you and I here, you know, there's something wrong here. We're being lied to about everything, including and especially this pandemic. And we've shut the country down, and there's just stuff wrong.
Yes. One could call it a pretest just to see what would happen. How long will we put up with it, the measurement of that? Could be that. Don't know. Not saying it is. It could be.
What else could it be? I mean,
you know, look how magically we've all, in just what, 2 months, we so magically turned to exactly what the government wanted us to do?
Yeah.
And all they had to do is just scare us a little bit with something that, some crisis or some such thing. Just a little bit. And look what's happened. People don't even stand next to each other in a post office line, 12, 20 feet apart.
That's right. Yeah,
we won't go out of our homes because maybe somebody next to us. Maybe. Why? Why do we think that? Why do we think that? You know, even if they had, even if that 17,000 positives was correct and they did 100,000 people that day, maybe that, you know, let's just assume that's correct. It's beyond the realm of possibility, but assume it is. What's the percentage of that in a country of 330 million? All of a sudden, we are afraid of our neighbor because of incorrect statistics. The neighbor couldn't be anywhere near it.
Right.
Nowhere near it. But we're afraid of him anyway. Maybe. Oh, we got to stay distant. Why?
Right.
Statistics, the real statistics of the effect doesn't back it up. 330 million people in our country.
Yes. And again, folks, please, so I don't get emails and Dr. Bart doesn't get emails. Look, we're not saying that this is not a bad or hoax virus. What we're saying is the response, the exploitation of everything is, you know, something's wrong. Something's out of sync here. And I think everyone knows that. And I don't believe, you know, Dr. Parker, I don't believe that after July 4th, I don't think we will recognize the United States if we keep going on the trajectory we are. I just don't think we're going to recognize our country.
I agree with you. It'll be have that much of a change.
Yeah.
I just looked at the population of the U.S. It's 329,461,870.
Wow.
And when you put 100,000 to that, 100,000 is one where the four went. I mean, it's minuscule.
Right.
Minuscule. Yet we're acting like it's right next door to us.
Well, you know, okay. And I got a lot of this from your Liberty series, Liberty, Will It Survive? It's interesting. I'll just say the bad guys, you know, the people who, for nefarious purposes, planned or had their hand in planning our societies. It's interesting how we've seen, like New York City, Los Angeles, these high density population areas that have a lot of diversity in terms of their population, the makeup of their population. They're the hotbeds, generally speaking, for this Chinese Party, Chinese Communist Party virus. So it's almost as if you write about this, the infrastructure for what we're seeing today, as you stated, has been planned for really over a century.
Yes, over a century. Absolutely.
Wow. What do you think?
Philip Drew Administrator was the outline, is the outline of that, which I refer to in my books. Philip Drew Administrator, written by False Colonel Mendel House.
That's right.
And that's the outline. That's the plan. And it's happening. It's going on just like he wrote it down to go. Just like he said. We're doing it.
Do you, what about the economic aspect of this? You know, I've read some things, I've seen some things. I don't know if you're familiar with NASARA, that's an acronym for this, forgive me, I'm a senior moment here. But some people say, oh, we're headed for this national economic reset, which it will be favorable because we're getting rid of the Fed and we're combining the Fed and the Treasury and, you know.
Oh, no, we're not. Oh, no, please don't say those things.
Okay.
Oh,
well,
no,
I'm reading this. I'm thinking,
I know.
Where in the world, how do you come up with that? That'd be great, but how do you come up with that? Or, I mean, would it be great? I mean,
what in that sentence would be great? I don't know. Help me know what would be great.
Well, obviously, you know, the Federal Reserve, let me rephrase that. There are some people who are saying that President Trump is attempting to get rid of the Federal Reserve, which I think we could both agree would be a good thing, right?
Absolutely. Would be the best in the world.
Okay.
But folding it into the Treasury doesn't get rid of it.
Exactly.
It gives it more power.
Thank you.
Now they become a official government entity, now a private company controlled by the Rothschild organization in Europe becomes an official part of our federal government.
Right.
Couldn't be worse.
Exactly.
Couldn't be worse.
But some people are taking this as, wait a minute, no, Donald Trump is freeing the country from the Fed. And again, nothing against Donald Trump and signing orders and legislation. I'm looking at this and I'm saying, I'm not seeing what other people are saying. I'm just not seeing the evidence where we are actually, you know, becoming autonomous or, you know, killing the Fed. I don't see that taking place. Do you? I mean, I don't see anywhere.
No, I do not. I do not see. In fact, there's some talk about every American, $1,200 every American.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like that. I'd like to have a nice $2,400 in my home. My wife and I'd probably spend it somewhere. But the key is everybody's going to have that. All that money. We talked about money being the focus of inflation.
Yep.
Last week.
Yep.
Here we go. We call it hyperinflation. When the government starts passing out that universal basic income.
There it is.
Have you heard of those terms?
Yep.
Universal basic income is that would be absolutely horrid. Well, sending everybody $1,200 starts towards a universal basic income.
Exactly.
It doesn't do it. It isn't there, but the pattern is there.
You know, under what pretext? I mean, what reason is it? I know the reason, but I'm asking you: is it because people aren't because of this emergency pandemic that people need this money to stimulate the economy? What's the reasoning behind this? And then what's the real reason behind it? I think you just said it, but
Let's look at the overall scope of where the government probably is wanting to go. They want us to be in a new world order. Our government, the bad guys of our government, want us to be in a new world order, and they want to dissolve the Constitution. They want to dissolve the dollar bill. They want everything gone so that it becomes worldwide. Special drawing rights will be the international stuff they'll do. But the point is that they want everything to be controlled by a world government centered in the United Nations. That's what the United Nations is about, the prelude of the world government, nothing else.
Sure.
Anyway, so here we go. What's going to happen if they put out that kind of money to our dollar that we have now? It will become worthless more than it is worth. It will be worth less than it was worth yesterday. And it won't take very long for that much money to hit the economy to have the prices reflected. So all we're really going to have is higher prices for everybody. And no real gain whatsoever. Now, today, I understand the real push. Today, people aren't at work. There are lots of people not at work because of the lockdown. They can't go to work. Therefore, they can't earn any money to spend to buy food. They got to borrow it. And they've already borrowed to the hilt, so they don't have that available. So people are going to be really hamstrung by this lockout stuff. They have to have an income. They can't have an income without money, without something coming in. They can't have an income without work. And people are going to lose their homes because banks won't care.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in a world of, we're in a problem. And if you really knew what goes on in banks, I'm just going to make a statement here that nobody will agree with, but a bank really doesn't care whether you pay the mortgage or not. It was all funny money that paid for it, so they didn't ever put any money in there. In anybody's pocket, they just gave you money on a check. There was no money there. Therefore, they never lose anything. So if somebody defaults on a credit card or they default on a home or a car, the bank loses nothing but an income stream. Now, nobody wants to say that. That's a major problem with our banking system. The income stream is what they care about.
Right.
They don't care. They want the income stream. So you've got loans. We're all loaned to the hilt. The debt ceiling is in the trillion, the 17 coming on $20 trillion of debt. Not talking about the federal debt of $23 trillion. This is the personal debt of the people. personal debt. We buy our cars and our houses and all that kind of stuff. That's in the trillions, working up to $20 trillion. Did I just add that to $43 trillion in debt in this country? Mm-hmm. And that's not the beginning. That's not the end. That's not all the state governments and all their debt, too. Oh, guys, we're a debt country. And the debt is what's destroying us. 25% of every working hour we spend goes to pay off the debt one way or another. That's the problem we're faced with. We're a debt country. We have decided that if we can afford it, we should get it. And afford it means I got enough to pay the credit card off and the interest. So we're developing ourselves into something. And now, with all that debt piled on us, here comes another 320 million. Well, and not every adult, so somebody goes like 320. But let's say it's 150 to 200 million people all get a windfall of $1,200 each. Do the math. That's a huge number.
Man.
And that will hit all funny money. It will be all financed by the Federal Reserve. It will just be all sucked into the Federal Reserve. And we'll create eventually more debt on the top of the $23 trillion we have now. It'll add to that, too. So that'll come back and haunt us again. And it's all funny money. There's no real money. Federal Reserve has no money. None. The Federal Reserve just makes money, prints it when the government asks for it.
And if I'm, where does this, so where does the wealth, not money, but wealth end up currently?
Oh, right now the wealth is all ending up in the wealthy Rothschild families. All the wealth is ending up there. This is how it happens. Banks loan money. Let's say a new business. I want to start a new business, and I've got a really good idea, and I convince the bank, and the bank gives me the money to start the business. And I borrow it. I borrow the money. Now, this is one person, but thousands and thousands and thousands are doing it. Hundreds of thousands are doing it at the same time. The interest rate goes down. Oh, money's cheap. Let's get it. All right. And I'm going to lock it in at a firm rate. So it won't go up and down. It'll stay at whatever it is today, you know, fixed rate. So here we go. By the way, that's not what credit cards are. But here we go, fixed rate. We're going to borrow all this money. We're going to build all these, and we're going to go. Now, to build this business, we're going to have equipment and machinery and inventory and all that kind of stuff, and we'll borrow to do all of that too. Now, the inventory flows, and it's flowing good, and we're building a business, and it's successful. And all of a sudden, the Fed decides that they're going to have a recession. And that's how it's done, by the way. The Fed decides we're going to have a recession.
Hmm.
And this recession will cause this new fledgling company that I just started a few years ago to go under because nobody can buy my product anymore. So what happens? I have to go bankrupt. So what happens? The bank possesses my business that I've worked to build. Now I've got that business. The equipment's still there. The inventory's still there. The blue sky, i.e. the sales, would be there if there was anybody who could buy anything. It's all still there. They bought my business through bankruptcy. It wound up in the bank. The bank doesn't want my business. It winds up in the hands of the, I call it international banking establishment. It winds up in their hands. Everything that you build in this business cycle goes to somebody else as soon as the cycle completes its run. Everything you build. Now think about that. You pay for a home. You pay for a home for 20 years. You can't pay now because of they take your home.
Right.
Your home now goes into somebody else's. It doesn't die. It doesn't go away. It doesn't burn down. Nobody destroys it. It now belongs to the government, international banking.
And they've got a real tangible, they end up with a real tangible asset.
Exactly. And if people would understand economics, they would see what's happening. But nobody does because everybody thinks it's a bad subject and it's hard to learn. And that's because of the economists themselves want everybody to be impressed by their knowledge, and they don't want people to be able to understand them. So they use words that nobody can talk about, buzzwords you can't believe, and everybody shies away from it. And there's no need to. Economics is simple. We all know it. Most of it, we just need it codified so we'll understand we do. We all know that sand and diamonds are the same thing, but they're not the same value. It's how much sand is, how many diamonds. That's the difference. That's the only difference. And everybody knows that. but it's not codified in their minds. And that's the key. There's the key. Just learning those few rules. That's why understanding, easily understood economics just says, hey, guys, you can learn these easy. They're not tough. But you got to have somebody who will explain it to you so you get the feel. That's what economics is all about. Nobody knows it. Nobody pays any attention to it. And the politicians know that we don't know it. Therefore, they raise a minimum wage. Oh, that's really great. Now I got another $2. I got another $40 a month. Wow, look at the benefit I got from my politician. I can finally buy stuff. Well, in 6 months, that $40 is already spent. And the economy has moved up to exactly the same number. So nothing, you have nothing more than, in 6 months, you have nothing more. And your grandparents living on a forced income have $40 less.
Exactly.
Because nothing, that never keeps up. So bingo, all the people that are working on Social Security and all those kind of welfare, all that kind of stuff, they're all hurting now because of it. They have to go back to work again. You get to save, get to have something for about 6 months. And bingo, then everybody's back exactly the same place they were before. Minimum wage is destroying our country as fast and economically, as fast as it can.
I'll say this, folks. Easily Understood Economics is one book that allowed me, you know, look, I'm 61 years old. It allowed me to really get a grasp on economics like I've never really understood it before. It breaks it down. It's simple. It's easy to understand, and hence the name, Easily Understood Economics by Dr. Richard Proctor, ProvisInstitute.com. You got to get yourself a copy of that. You really do. Bathroom Economics as well. Interesting book, a lot of great information in there. And, you know, once you understand this, you can understand a lot of things, what's going on. So let me ask this at this point. Here we are in, I don't know, week three, something two of this, whatever this is, economic shutdown, this stoppage.
Yeah, I'd say week three is a good go at it.
Okay, so if this lasts for any length of time, because I can see Donald Trump saying, we got to get back to work, man. We got to get back to work. I understand that. Believe me. We're not made. I mean, we can't just stop. You know, anyone who's had a loved one, a wife or a spouse in the hospital, you know, if it's a long-term thing, you still have to go to work because you got to pay the bills. It's a horrible situation, but you got to do it. So I guess my question is, it's a multi-part question. If we don't start working again, if we don't start getting things going again, what's going to happen? That's number one. Number two, is this a plandemic, so to speak, where maybe the economic impact here is kind of, maybe the plandemic is a cover for this economic situation we're in a sense. And again, trying to be respectful, you know, I mean, where do you see us going at this point?
Well, the overall plan is to turn our country into a socialist nation just like everywhere else, so that just a few people control everything that happens and they live high on the hog and the rest of us are slaves. That's the plan. Will all of these steps, economic steps, lead towards the fulfillment of that plan? We don't need 200 million people getting a gratis check for $1,200 each. We don't need it. We don't want it. Well, we want it individually, but overall, the economy doesn't want it. It's all planned to destroy our society. It's all planned to destroy our Constitution. It's all planned to destroy our standards of living. Free trade is to destroy our standard of living. And it's been very successful. And Trump's trying to get some of it back so that we have some industry again. And they fight him tooth and toenail. They fight him. Oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. They call it a border tax. It's not a border tax. You have to pay more. Of course you do, because you're going to pay people in the United States to work. Don't you think we ought to have jobs? Don't you think we need to have our society back where it was before, when we had jobs that were paying a decent wage, we had a middle class, we had people that were producing things, we were buying our own products. I mean, we grew and everything was fine and hunky-dory. Free trade came along, and the end result is our businesses go overseas and they just bring it back for free, and our jobs all go overseas, and if we don't move with them, we don't have one. I mean, you can go to ghost towns in this country that have been created by free trade. And nobody pays attention to that. So what we have now is a service industry country. We all make beds, or we flip hamburgers and that kind of stuff, but we don't make any real steel products anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Erie, Pennsylvania, a big-time steel town, National Forge and other businesses. You can drive down one of the main roads here, and you can see all of the shuttered industrial plants.
Yes, and they're shuttered because of free trade.
Exactly.
They're shuttered because our federal government wanted them shuttered, and they used free trade to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And just so I'm not leaving anyone out, is Sharon, Newcastle, Sharon and around there, Farrell, Pennsylvania. I drive through there, and oh, my goodness. I mean, to see the shell of what it once was. When did that happen? That was in the 70s, right? In earnest.
A little bit closer to the 90s is when it really started happening.
Okay.
It came, the President Clinton was a major focus in it. A major focus.
And
it was just after.
And isn't that funny? Because that was with China, right? I mean, the big thing was with China, with Clinton.
Well, it was, but it was just any place, textile industries was the first one. Really the first one that was experimented with and discovered that we could buy all our textile industries overseas cheaper.
Wow.
So we could take our people, we can take our businesses overseas cheaper. I'll use the illustration here. I've got a basket weaving shop. I've got a shop. We sell really nice baskets, and we've been selling these baskets for a lot of years, and we get about, $15, $20 a basket because they're really nice baskets. And people buy them because they like these baskets. They can cart things around. They enjoy these baskets. I've got this company. Well, now remember, I'm selling them for $20 right here in the States. I look over Sierra Leone, very small country. By Jove, I can make these baskets for like 18 cents. And it only cost me about 25 or 30 cents to bring them back, and I only have to put about 25 or 30 cents of materials in them when I buy it there. So I can probably make these baskets whole cost at about a buck and a half, and I can still sell them for $20 here. Oh, what should I do?
Mm-hmm.
Free trade allows me to go to Sierra Leone and make my baskets.
Right.
And I don't pay those people any better than they're getting anyway, because that would destroy their economy. If I went in and paid them a big wage, or go and paid $10 an hour to my people to make baskets for me, just like here, people in the Sierra Leone would do nothing except want to get in my business of making baskets so they could get $10 an hour. Everybody would flock to my business, and other things would not work. And then those people that God would have so much money that it would put pressure on the money that everybody else had. Inflation would begin, all because I moved my company there and paid the wages that the people who are here say I should pay there. We destroy that country and our own. How about that? But people don't know this because they don't understand economics. They don't see the side. They don't see the standard of living effects of trade. We used to be the top standard of living in the world. Now we're number three. In 14, we were number three. I don't know where we are today. Number three, we used to be way ahead of everybody.
Right.
Free trade, in 14, we were number three, going down.
And this country, our wealth has been, we've been robbed of our wealth. In order to be a country, a thriving country, we have, as you mentioned, and in your books, I should say, you talk about this. I mean, we've got to be a country that produces something, and we don't produce anything. You know,
production is the measure of a country.
Yes.
Not gold and silver. Production is the measure of a country. If we properly backed our money, it would be backed with production, not gold and silver.
Which, and a lot of people don't quite get this, and I want to ask you this. A lot of people will call the dollar today, the petrodollar. And,
yes, that's true.
All right. So when we say the petrodollar, what is that? What does that mean? And I know, I mean, folks, bear with me here. But what does that mean when it's petrodollar?
Just easily said. What it means is the petrodollar means that all petroleum products have to be sold, bartered, and traded in dollars. That's your reserve currency. It started in about 1946 or 7, that kind of a thing. We became the reserve currency of the world, and we still are. And all petroleum, it becomes, this is just simplistic, all petroleum is bought and sold in U.S. dollars.
Okay.
Until two countries get together and say, we're going to buy and sell it between ourselves. And we won't get dollars to do it. We won't worry about it.
Which is
then the dollar isn't used.
Yeah, which seems to be kind of happening.
Yes, it is.
And, I mean, look at Iraq. Isn't it interesting when they developed their own currency separate from the petrodollar? What happened? Well, Iraq isn't Iraq anymore, or Libya. Kind of the same thing. And again, broad strokes here, as opposed to, you know, sniper rounds.
We don't want to go into all the fancy words and all the little detail. Just think of it this way, that our money has been the trading dollar of the world.
Right.
And if our money goes skiwampus, then other countries are going to say, well, we'd rather we have our money be the trading money of the world. There
exactly.
are countries in the world who use our dollar in their vaults to back their own money.
Which is a good thing, right?
Yes, okay. It is until our dollar drops in value.
Right.
So that all happened in 1970 when Nixon took the dollar off the market, of the gold standard off the market, off the international market.
Yeah. Yep.
When they took the gold standard off of the U.S., it didn't really matter because we're just trading within the U.S., but when they took the gold standard off the international trade, it went from $35 an ounce to $44 very quickly. And people were then buying. We were still buying at working at $35 an ounce. And India was working at $40 an ounce. So the gold moved from our country to India. Yes, because they could buy it. They could sell it. They're $44, and they sell their money back to us. They buy the gold from us at $35, then they go and sell it at $44, and then they come back to us and buy more at $35, and they sell it at $44, and that's how it was going. And then it kind of calmed down.
Right.
But today, wow, because of this very same concept, gold is now running in the $1,000, $1,500, where it should be is closer to $5,000 today.
Exactly. But it's manipulated, that, and so
yes.
all of the precious metals.
Everything is manipulated, absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the ways it's manipulated, okay, now this is something that's hidden from everybody. It's hidden. I want to get some gold. I want to buy it. I want to buy gold at the least price I can pay for it. Well, I got a friend down here who's got a business, and he stores gold. And he goes around, he says, you know, I've got gold here I can sell you. I've got gold for $700 an ounce or whatever the number would be, $700 an ounce, and I'll sell it to you. And I'll store it for you so you don't have to worry about it.
Hmm.
Oh, this is really good because gold is hard to store. So you just bought that. What's that called? That's called paper gold.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have the gold. He has the gold. You have the paper. See, that's called paper gold.
Right.
People are buying stocks in gold companies. That's called paper gold. About 4 years ago, I was on a radio show with Miles Crenshaw here in Utah, and we were talking about this. And he pointed out to me, I was talking about a statistic of $90 of paper gold to $1 of real gold. And he said, no, Richard, no, it's changed. Now it's $190 of paper gold to one real gold. Now, every time these people sell, there's only so many dollars in the economy to buy gold. You know, you got to buy the things. So only so much is available. If everybody can buy gold at 700, they'll buy the gold that way, and it will be paper gold now, not real gold, not the real thing. You haven't got it in your hand. He's got it in storage for you. Now that's paper gold.
Mm-hmm.
The paper gold kept the price of the whole gold market down because they were selling it below the real gold price, or what the real gold price should have been. They were selling it less. So that kept the price down. So the price stopped at 1900 and started to decrease. And that's around 1415, I guess. But it began to decrease. And that's because people began to buy paper gold thinking they had gold.
Right.
They got gold certificates. They got all kinds of stuff. But they don't have gold. And it applies to silver, too. Both of them apply the same. Now, someday, they all think they've got gold and they all have their wealth in gold. They really do. Yeah, they think. Now, the day is going to come when they're going to want to get that gold because it's going to be needed for the economy, because the economy is going to go bad and they're going to go want to get their gold.
I want physical possession, right. They're going to want physical possession, right.
And so these people, but they're going to go get the gold from the storage place. But it ain't there. 190 to 1, and that was in about 14 or 15. Mm-hmm. 190, well, I guess it was like 16, doesn't matter. It's worse than that today. What do you think will happen to the price of gold when they discover they don't have any?
Well,
I see 50,000
yeah.
as a possibility per ounce.
So what you're saying, and my friend Steve Quill always says this, if you don't have it in your hand, you really don't own it.
That's right. You don't have it. If you don't have it in your hand, you don't have it. That goes for both gold and silver. Those are the two precious metals that they use that way, gold and silver. And another thing good about gold is if you've got it, you can melt it and sell it in pieces.
Sure.
If you're going to buy something. Now, you really don't want to do that because everybody has to have a scale then. You got to make sure the scale's accurate. So you really don't want to do that. So they produce gold coins in 1/10 of a gold, 1/10 of an ounce.
Right.
And so now you've got something that's a little smaller. And you can do that with silver, too. So what you've got is you've got an opportunity today to buy gold and silver at a price. And everybody says, oh, look at the money you're going to make because the money's going to go, the value's going to go up. No, 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 no. You never, ever sell any gold and silver you acquire. It is not an investment for today to make more money. That's a commodity. They're treating it as a commodity. Look, the price is going to go up. Look how much money I made. Oh, it went down. Oh, I got to get rid of my gold because it's going down. No, 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 no. You buy the gold. You keep the gold. You buy the silver. You keep the silver. And nobody knows you've got it.
That's right. It's wealth storage. It's wealth that you've got. Yes.
Yes. You keep it, but you never tell anybody you've got it. Never anybody you've got it. You store it your own way under your control.
Yep.
You do not store it with somebody else. You keep the gold. You get the physical gold itself. Do it in coins, 1 ounce coins. Do it in 1 ounce coins because that's easy to work with. But you get it and keep it. Get it and keep it. Don't
Amen.
Ever sell it.
Yeah, and I see people, you know, yapping. For example, when silver was $44, $45 an ounce, and now it's $14, $16. To me, okay, look, if somebody buys silver at $44, then at $35, if it was a good deal at $35, it's a great deal at $16 or $14, whatever it is, selling for currently. I don't know, but, you know.
Yes, it is. That's the neighborhood.
So, you know. Same with gold. So it's a buying opportunity.
Gold.
Yeah. So it's the lack of understanding by people, I think, about precious metals that really gets them in trouble and you know,
This is one. I did buy some gold at those prices, $30 and $40 an ounce. I have it. I mean, silver, I mean. I
sure.
did buy some. Yeah, I did. Not
okay.
very much, but I did buy some. I don't care that it's 14. Don't give a darn.
No. No. And if you do it often enough, you're dollar cost averaging anyway, but the bottom line is you're not doing it as a commodity. And that's the key. It's not a commodity in the sense of commodities.
Never, never, never let go of it. Never.
Right. Right.
It doesn't deteriorate. Never let go of it. Store it your own way, in some way that you know you've got it stored safely, but not in anybody else's possession.
Amen to that.
Now, there's some serious problems to do what I just said. Nonetheless, you've got to work towards doing that. Now, I just mentioned that about a little silver, okay? Everybody has figured that out when I started talking about these things. But it's absolutely crucial. Do not consider it a commodity that you're going to make money on. Consider it a wealth item that you're going to save your life because you have it. And if you want to get the effect of that, get in touch. Find a book written by Ron Carter. It's a Prelude to Glory series. There's 9 books in the series. It's a Revolutionary War series. And if you can get a hold of volume 8. There are 9. You get a hold of volume 8. And in that, it talks about the time between the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812 and the problems. And the only people who survived were those who had gold in their possession.
Wow.
Everybody else was stricken with poverty and had no way around it, were starving.
And that was around the Revolutionary War time, you said?
Around. Yes, Revolutionary War, right between the two.
Okay.
Everybody, and he shows it really exactly how it works. He does an excellent job. Ron Carter's series, 9 books, Revolutionary War series, is an outstanding set of books about the history of the Revolutionary War and the making of the Constitution in Book 7. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
All these things are excellent.
Okay.
But Book 8 talks about the time in between the two wars and the economic problems. The farmers, they lost all their land because they didn't have any gold. They lost their homestead because they didn't have any gold.
What did they have? I mean, comparable to today, paper money or just the...
No. They had land.
Land,
these
okay.
people were, they were, they had family homesteads. They've been there family farming it for decades, okay? Since the 1600s in many cases. They owned this land. They produced on it. They went to the Revolutionary War. They fought the war and we won. We won the war. We didn't win the peace, but we won the war. And then what happened, you see, is that they went home, they got paid scrip by the government, that nobody's going to buy that. So they went to the bank and they said, look, you guys, we just got this scrip, it's not worth anything, and we understand it. Would you please loan us the seeds we need so we can plant our crops, and when we get to the harvest, we'll pay you. Is that okay? And everybody in the United States, the bank said, yes, there was no Federal Reserve, remember? No central bank. Well, they said that they'd do that. And so they did. Well, there was a central bank, but it wasn't yet in really bad effect. So anyway, so here we go. They had their farms planted. Here comes July. They're all growing. Everybody's doing their normal stuff. And the Bank of England forecloses on the banks of America. But they won't accept anything but gold specie and silver specie. They won't accept anything else. Now, this is the Revolutionary War soldiers and their families. So the banks had to foreclose on the loans, and they couldn't take anything but gold and silver. So sheriffs came. You didn't pay it. The sheriffs legally came and took away their land and their homesteading land they took away because they didn't have any gold and silver. This went on in the cities. People had businesses they lost because they didn't have any gold and silver. Had they kept the gold and silver, or had they known about it, and kept the gold and silver, not spend it, not invest it, not spend it when it was high, not just bought when it was low, and even bought when it was high, and not spend it, not save it, they'd have had gold. And everybody who had gold and silver in their possession was really doing okay during that interval. But very few did. But they who did was doing fine.
Interesting.
That's the pattern.
And that's the lesson, too.
Yes.
I mean, for the future. Wow.
Yes.
All right. And
folks, there's an economic lesson, you guys.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you what, bathroom economics and easily understood economics. Not only is Dr. Proctor an expert in the Constitution, he's an expert in economics as well. And that, a very valuable lesson indeed. Now, here we only have about 5 minutes left of the program. This has gone so quickly. If I can ask you where we're at today economically with the stimulus and with the economic shutdown, are we looking – all wars are bankers' wars, as they say. Are we looking at an upcoming war perhaps?
Well, let's think about it now. Let's just think about what you just said. Nobody's at work. They can't buy things, but they still want to eat. they still have to pay. They still have debts. They have to pay, or they will lose their property, they'll lose their livelihood, they'll lose things. There are people in our country that will say, it appears to me that he's got some stuff we need. Let's go take it. That's mobs. It appears to me that some people will be so angry at the federal government that they'll begin to storm and form in groups and say, you're the guys who put us under. We know what happened. You're the guys who put us under. And they may say, militia groups that are wild people. I'm not talking about real militia. I'm talking about the wild militia. Those militia groups will begin to take matters into their own hands. And this country could be headed for an absolute disaster if we don't get back to work and get going within a few months. And Trump knows it. And people, he's trying to hold out some, please, let's get back to work. Let's get back to work. But the media isn't on board with him. The media is on board with Rothschild and Company.
Right.
The media is not on board with Trump. Therefore, they're making sure that everybody's still scared to death. While Trump's trying to say, please get back to work. Fireside chats like Roosevelt did. Please, please, let's keep going. All is not lost. Let's get back to work.
Wow.
And the media says, you're still sick. Everybody's sick. Everybody's sick. 12 feet apart. Nobody goes to work. Stay at home. You'll be safe. And everybody's scared. They stay at home, so they'll be safe. And if we don't start going to work, safe or not, we're not going to have an economy to survive too. Then all the people that have been hoarding gold and silver will have what they need.
Well, that's one hell of a way to win, I guess.
Or... I don't want to see anybody winning that way. I'd like to see the country prospering like it's supposed to. But our standard of living could drop to not the third. We could drop clear into the 10th or 12th or 15th in the line. And it'd be better to live almost anywhere else in the world than here.
And I think you just described, if Donald Trump loses or does not prevail in his policies, and we're looking at, a potential Sanders, Biden, it doesn't really matter. The bottom line is this is going to be a socialist failed nation.
Yes, it is. That's exactly. It doesn't matter who gets in. If a Democratic candidate wins, or the Democratic candidates win the Senate and the House, we will become a socialist nation within 2 or 3 years. And everything will be controlled by the government. And we don't have to have any question about it. And if you want to understand what that means, go get the movie Dr. Zhivago and just watch it through. Watch the movie Dr. Zhivago and put the United States in the place of Russia, because that's where we're headed if we don't get back to work. Whether there's disease or not, we've got to get back to work.
And there it is. Dr. Richard Proctor, provisinstitute.com. I'm going to have to leave it right there. We're out of time. And what a fascinating program today, and topical and important. Folks, please pass this along to your friends, your family. It's so important.
And get the books. I'm sorry, guys. Get the books. I explain all these things so you'll have the background and you'll understand them if you get the books.
Don't apologize. I'm going to tell you right now, they're worth every penny and more. And that's a constitution if you can keep it. The bathroom economics, easily understood economics. You've got the Liberty.
Don't forget the Liberty series. That tells the
critical
story of why we're where we are.
That's
and
critical.
People will then understand why they're where we are.
Did I miss one? I mean, go to provisinstitute.com and just have at it, because, man, it's so important. Dr. Proctor, thank you very much, and I hope you had a great birthday yesterday.
I did. It was fun. I did all kinds of fun things.
That's good.
I shipped books. Those are fun things.
Well, hopefully you're going to be shipping a lot more after tonight. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for all you do. I really appreciate
the opportunity to help get the word out. I really do.
All right, my man. Thank you so very much, Dr. Proctor. All right, folks. All right, Doctor. All right, folks.
Take care.
All right.
Till next week. Bye-bye.
Yes, indeed. That'll do it. That'll almost do it for me. Tomorrow we've got Steve Quayle and Tom Horn. Tomorrow night, Steve Quayle and Tom Horn. By the way, you go to HagmanReport.com and There's a write-up there at HagmanReport.com, and please pass the word out about today's program and about tomorrow's program as well. Don't forget, Chris Ann Hall sat in for Keith Hansen last night. Make sure you catch her. I caught that program today. It was very good. Very good. Chris Ann Hall, constitutional attorney, as is Dr. Richard Proctor, who gave us a lot of time today as well. I really appreciate that. You know, look, folks, there's more to this that we're in. There's more going on than people realize, I believe. And if you get somebody out there who says, yeah, I know exactly what's going on, chances are, at least in my view, they don't. Just keep your head on a swivel. Hit your knees. Pray. Put everything in God's hands. Have faith in God. Until tomorrow. God bless.